in our Bill of Rights is the freedom to hear uncensored ideas and opinions, to think your own thoughts, and to say what's on your mind. We couldn't have liberty without it. Now, more than ever, it's good to spout off, to listen, debate, and participate. Here's your host of Spouting Off, commentator, columnist, and all-around rabble-rouser, Karen Cataline. Now, the one who protects us all from prattling prognosticators and perfidious pundits.
I say, America, stay out the bushes.
Look for the union label.
And to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the government.
From my cold, dead hands.
I'm concerned that if we don't impeach this president, he will get reelected.
It's time for the Alan Nathan All-Stars, the longest-running, nationally syndicated centrist show in the country. Now, here's your All-Star host.
I guess I am that All-Star host for today. I'm Karen Cataline. Pleasure to be with you. And it's an honor to sit in the big chair that Alan Nathan used to sit in. We still mourn his passing. And here's his motto in honor of Alan: we want the Republicans out of our bedrooms, the Democrats out of our wallets, and both out of our First and Second Amendment rights. Well, we're going to dive right in with our very first guest here on the Alan Nathan All-Stars. Robert Romano joins us, Executive Director of Public Policy at Americans for Limited Government. Love that title. Robert Romano, thanks for joining us here on the Main Street Radio Network.
You know, I just, you mentioned that. That's the first I've heard of Alan's passing. I'm so sorry to him and his, his family and friends and his audience. I'm happy to be with you today, though. That's so sad. I didn't know.
Yes. Well, we got that in real time, your reaction. And yes, it was untimely and very unexpected. And we do this show to honor his memory and to keep on keeping on the way a lot of people do after a big loss and a big tragedy. So thank you for that. Robert, you are at the forefront of a couple of issues, most specifically the SAVE Act and rallying Republican support for it in the Senate. Before we get down into the weeds a little bit, which is very important, isn't the SAVE Act, I think it's two-pronged. One of them is to enforce or require voter ID in all elections, or at least national ones. Is that true?
Yes, and that's what the Senate is doing, I believe, to improve the legislation. In addition, the House passed version requires proof of citizenship to register to vote in the first place. And so that two-pronged approach will be effective at cleaning up our voter rolls once and for all, provided that the House and the Senate can come together on this and could somehow get to President Trump's desk. I believe Republicans should use this to attach to spending resolutions. Democrats want to have their own attachments, and then you negotiate down from there, usually, because all spending bills, appropriations, DHS is pending, are going to be bipartisan bills by and large. They agree to those. That's how the government stays funded every single year. You don't have a partisan funding mechanism when neither party controls 60 seats in the Senate when they have trifecta majorities like right now. So usually and oftentimes there's mixed government whereby like a Democrat controlled House, a Republican Senate, Republican president, for example. That could be where you are next year, by the way. It would result in yet another bipartisan compromise. So there's going to be a lot of horse trading. This could be one of the things, the SAVE Act. You want to see it pass, of course, but you want to, there's the mechanism for doing so is obviously on the DHS funding bill that's now pending and imminently about to defund as Democrats want to get rid of ICE and probably all law enforcement, but they'll settle on immigration enforcement for the moment.
You know, when I hear you talk about it, I'm so glad you're so knowledgeable about what goes on in the House and the Senate. But everyday people, I think, are frustrated, at least conservatives, everyday conservatives, that we have seen a disingenuousness on the part of the left. And actually, there are some on the right, too. But disingenuousness about simple, basic honesty things like voter ID in particular. We can talk about deportation, DHS, and you've graciously been willing to stay for another segment because these segments are short, and we're grateful for that. It's infuriating to hear major Democrats continue to cling to this preposterous notion that minorities can't get an identification and it is therefore racist to require one to vote. And believe it or not, conservatives have rolled over for this preposterous idea. And I'm concerned they're going to roll over again instead of pointing out the obvious. Number one, it's a racist idea. And number two, they're trying to protect their right to keep cheating. Where am I wrong?
You're not wrong. The Democrats are obviously going to say that voter ID is racist. And in the meantime, Republicans just need to stick to their guns, that this is necessary to have free and fair elections in a country where, you know, you're going to verify people's identity when they're registering to vote and when they're frankly, when they go out to vote. It's not a big deal. You need identification to do basic things like just purchase cigarettes or alcohol or go traveling. Gun purchases also are covered in all of this. I think that showing ID, you know, you're going to submit tax documents, apply for a job, like everyone asks for identification. This is not unusual. Yeah. At all, and to require it for voting is not at all, has nothing to do with race. It is race neutral. In fact, it applies to, I believe, every person. So it's a person requirement, not a racial requirement. And so no one should be offended by it. And you don't need to shape public policy around what is offensive. You shape public policy around outcomes. In this case, you want free and fair elections. The way to guarantee that is by guaranteeing people a vote. Now, as far as disingenuousness about Republicans in general and trying to pass these matters, another option I mentioned, the funding bill, would be to abolish the filibuster, legislative filibuster. If they have 51 votes to do that, then they could. That's an option as well. They might not have 51 votes to do that, and that's a different question. And I believe Republicans should be upfront about that. Why not put it up for a rules change? Just bring up the fact that it requires 60 votes under standing Senate rules, and then amend standing Senate rules, which will require a two-thirds vote. But that's fine. Put everyone on the record. You want to abolish the filibuster? Let's just vote on that. Why not just have a little, and then everyone will say, oh, wow, there's only 20 senators that support abolishing the filibuster. Or, wow, there's 57 senators. Well, you could get there in a minute if we just did some more horse trading or something like that. The American people have a right to know where their representatives and their senators stand on that vital matter. How should we pass legislation? It is the controversy. The president has stated he wants to abolish the filibuster to get the SAVE Act passed. Well, then put it up for a vote. Let's do a rules change. Democrats say they want to abolish the filibuster. Do it on its merits while Republicans have a majority, and then show their hypocrisy when they decide, oh, no, we'll only do that when we're in power. It's like, we know.
Of course. Of course. I can't help but continue to go back to the idea. You know, I guess it depends on who you're talking to. You know, when Republicans and others who really want to pass this SAVE Act talk to the general public whenever they have the opportunity, at least reasonable minds who are willing to listen to the other side, and many are not. Tell me whether you agree. You're a policy person, and you know the ins and outs of all this, and that's why you're on the radio. We're really, really glad that you're here. But I get frustrated because I just want more Republicans to stand up and say that the Democrat position on voter ID is in and of itself racist. They won't say that. And yet that is the environment we are in because of Democrats. Democrats are the ones that throw around words like Hitler and racist and bigot. And it just seems to me that so much of this is in the public sphere, and people are used to hearing that hurled from people who don't believe that minorities are smart enough to get an ID, even though almost all minorities have IDs. It is a blatantly racist statement. Why not just say that?
It's demeaning. And yeah, you want to call out something when you see it as being racist. Like the president just had to take down a Truth Social video that I guess the staffer didn't notice that there was a racist meme in the middle of it or something when they posted it. But that's what happens. You put
well, but
you
it's
it
not.
And
it's
say, oh,
how
that's
is it demeaning?
We don't support that.
How so, is it demeaning
It's not demeaning to have voter ID, of course. And that's
yeah. How is it demeaning
to Republicans should say that
for Yeah, and so you and I do agree on that. I think. That it's perfectly legitimate. The thing you're talking about is a whole different story, which is being made hay, you know, lots of hay. Anyway, so glad you're staying. We'll clear this up when we come back. Karen Cataline with you on the Alan Nathan All-Stars. Robert Romano, very knowledgeable on these questions on the SAVE Act. Stay with us. We'll be back.
In a rare moment in entertainment, a blockbuster film release and a major game expansion in the Avatar universe dropping together. It's a crossover that has movie studios and game developers building worlds in tandem. Futurist and innovation leader Matt Marr explains.
Instead of releasing a film and then a game later as a bonus, developers are now designing these worlds together from day one. And we're seeing that play out now with Avatar Frontiers of Pandora from the Ashes. The expansion builds on its base game Avatar Frontiers of Pandora, and players really get to live some of the key experiences from the new film on their own terms. Visually speaking, the game is stunning, lush, bioluminescent greenery, realistic wildlife, many of the features that have positioned the Avatar films among the greats. You can soar on your Banshee, master new Na'vi abilities in combat, and take on story missions that bridges with the film's events. Instead of watching the adventure unfold, you get to participate in it and control your own fate, all while uncovering never-before-seen parts of Pandora.
You can go to Ubisoft.com to learn more about From the Ashes.
Volkswagen introduced a bold new ad campaign during the big game last Sunday, a reimagined version of the iconic Drivers Wanted. The new campaign invites a new generation to embrace individuality, curiosity, and saying yes when opportunity calls. Rachel Zaluzic, Volkswagen's SVP of Customer Experience and Brand Marketing.
Now is the perfect moment to remind our enthusiasts why they love Volkswagen and to welcome others to join in. Drivers Wanted is more than a message. It's an invitation to take the wheel and experience the freedom and fun on the road.
The commercial, a callback to the brand's popular Drivers Wanted ads from the 90s, reminds people that on the road of life, there are passengers and there are drivers. It's a nod to the original era of Drivers Wanted, reimagined for a new audience with the same spirit and energy. To view the campaign film, The Great Invitation, and maybe find yourself in a Volkswagen of your own, visit VW.com.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan's All-Stars. I'm Karen Cataline, and it is a pleasure to have with us for one more segment Robert Romano, Executive Director of Public Policy at Americans for Limited Government. Before we get to just the very end of what we were talking about whether it's okay to call Democrats racist for thinking minorities are too stupid to get an ID. Tell us quickly about Americans for Limited Government, and because it sounds like a wonderful organization. People need to learn more about it. We're always a little rushed at the end of the segment, so why don't you give us a little more information about that?
Yeah, we want to restore constitutional limited government to the limited powers that are set forth by the Constitution and the laws that Congress has passed with an emphasis on federal policy. And we've been around since the 1990s. I myself have been here for, 18 years now, 2008. The economy was crashing, and I just graduated from college, and I had to, with a political science degree. And I had to figure out quickly about mortgage-backed securities and the wonderful world of finance. As the economy was melting, Republicans were going to lose supermajorities in the Senate. And we were about to see the Tea Party come along. That was our first fun project, I think.
I do remember that. I remember when $987 million, just a hair short of a trillion, was too much for us to handle. And conservatives started protesting. And it infuriated the Democrats because they think they're the only ones allowed to protest. so getting back to this question, I just wanted to know, is it okay for even a policy wonk to say, you know what, it's racist to use as an excuse why you don't want voter ID to claim that it's because minorities are too dumb to get an ID when almost all of them have an ID for all kinds of things? And we all know all the things you need an ID for. And it isn't race specific in any way. Why should we be on the defensive about that?
Republicans, conservatives shouldn't be on the defensive about that. It is racist to suggest that somebody can't get an ID by virtue of their race. It's a race-based distinction. It's basically a stereotype at this point. So, I don't think we should do stereotyping. I think we could just pass public policies based on their merits, which is that, frankly, we want citizens to vote. The other part of the SAFE Act is about ensuring citizens can vote. So it may not be a race-based distinction. We could have a nationality-based distinction that needs to be asserted, though, because the franchise is for citizens. And we have a country called the United States of America, and we want to protect its integrity and its voter integrity.
Exactly.
These are very basic arguments. Isn't that kind of
passion in an environment where the left is screaming up and down with their hair on fire, calling everybody racist, and a lot of gullible people buying into this propaganda, I think sometimes that you got to fight fire with fire. It's also a pretty doggone good question, I would guess. Why is it that only America is it bad to have open borders? There isn't another country in the world that is being told to completely destroy its culture, its language, and its heritage to let in everyone. Every country practically in the world has rules about entering its country, except those that are so terrible they need people because no one wants to live there.
Yeah, you have to have limits on immigration, obviously, and we don't want to have illegal immigration. You want to have a process there. And President Trump has restored that process. He has secured the border. We were getting 10.8 million border encounters on the southern border during the Biden administration, and that's down to, I don't know, 140,000 per year now, something thereabouts. That's not too many, and that's a huge 95% decrease, 90-plus percent decrease in the amount of border encounters just by putting the military there. Suddenly, refugees, so-called, stopped coming. Wow. I guess their lives weren't in danger after all, because they stopped showing up the moment somebody at the gate.
How about that? Yeah. And I noticed just yesterday a wonderful story by a British journalist, Ben Leo, who, after the Grammys, decided to do the investigative journalism the propaganda media just won't do by going to Billie Eilish's house, her $3 million Los Angeles pad, to see if she practices what she preaches. She preached, "I didn't see the Grammys, nor would I want to." She said, "Nobody's illegal on stolen land." But not at Billie's house, her $3 million pad, in which there's high security, huge walls, security fences, cameras, and a massive gate. So she's a property owner? Yeah. She lives on stolen land.
Wow.
You know, and how come, and this journalist said, "How come you're not letting me in? I mean, aren't you on stolen land?" And then people came forward and said, "Yeah, she is on stolen land." But it's beside the point. This is hypocrisy signaling. And it bugs me when we think we have to attribute good intentions to those who have none. So maybe I'm just fired up and I think, you know what? in order to pass this doggone thing, something as basic as voter ID, so that dead people and illegal aliens do not vote in our elections, which is against our laws, that maybe we have to fight fire here with fire and point out that they don't have a leg to stand on, but they depend on conservatives not to fight back with I mean, you can't have policy discussions with people who cheer for Hamas and want to get rid of law enforcement in our country so that innocent people will get raped, robbed, and murdered. You know, I guess I'm just a little fired up today. But I think it's okay for our side to be fired up is, I guess, what I'm saying. I'm not trying to get on your case. I'm just saying Republicans need to do this. Yeah.
It's 80% of voters in recent polls support voter ID. This is a no-brainer for Republicans and President Trump. That's why they're always talking about it. This is where they have the upper hand politically. It's just common sense. And you can do that across race. And most people of most races, all races, are saying that they support voter ID. It's a universally popular idea. And therefore, Republicans shouldn't be afraid of it whatsoever. And everyone protects their own property. But Democrats, the radical Democrats, this very small segment of the population, believes that everyone has property rights except for our country. And we're not allowed to defend our country against invaders and people coming across the border. We can't even protect our own communities from these people because you can't get violent criminals out. Well, how you're going to have to get everyone else out, too. And it's like, no, you need to have deterrence against this sort of thing. And the president, CBS just came out with a report today. 60% of the people being detained and deported by ICE are criminals. They have criminal records. You can
absolutely
verify it.
And the ones that aren't legal broke a law by entering our country without doing it the right way.
Oh,
as far as I'm concerned, these are red herrings that the Democrats put up because they really hate our country. But you can't do talk radio only on that. So thank you so much for giving us lots of good policy. And I hope people will support this. Call their senators and congressmen and pass this bill. Thank you, Robert Romanos, for giving us the benefit of your time. We appreciate you. We'll be right back.
We're less than a month away from the 2026 Winter Olympic Games in Milan, Cortina. Two-time U.S. national champion and Team USA biathlete Chloe Levins is gearing up for the Games while simultaneously preparing for a career after sports.
I feel like I'm living a dual career where I'm balancing multiple things, working my current part-time jobs, advancing my competitive career, and preparing for my career after sport all at the same time. That last part has historically been the most daunting for elite athletes, but having Guild as a resource for Team USA is an absolute game changer by giving athletes access to hundreds of degree and certificate programs tuition-free. The flexibility of the programs allows us to take classes remotely. Personally, I'm traveling to camps and competitions 5 months out of the year, so the ability to do this on my own schedule was absolutely essential. Guild's partnership with Team USA allows us to work on our future while we're representing the U.S. at the highest level in elite sport.
To learn more about Guild's partnership with Team USA and its athletes, visit guild.com.
As game day approaches, hosts are looking for food that's ready when they are. Snacks to go from freezer to table in minutes so no one misses a big play. Chef Jamie Gwen has more.
Game day food should feel familiar and easy. You want snacks you can keep stocked in your freezer and cook fresh when guests arrive or halftime hits. That way, everything comes out hot, crispy, and ready to enjoy without spending the whole game in the kitchen.
That mindset is shaping how hosts plan for the big game, with more people choosing crowd-friendly snacks and appetizers that you can prepare quickly.
With Farm Rich, it's easy to serve fan favorites everyone loves, like breaded mozzarella sticks made in the air fryer, loaded potato skins served with your favorite dips, and jalapeno peppers wrapped in bacon. It's simple, recognizable food that always disappears fast.
Find Farm Rich near you at farmrich.com and follow them on social at Farm Rich Snacks for game day recipe ideas. Happy hosting!
Welcome back, everyone, to the Alan Nathan All-Stars. I'm Karen Cataline, commentator, columnist, and all-around rabble-rouser. And we welcome next on our show, Andy Ross, country and patriotic rock artist and former TV host. He is the founder and CEO of American Rebel, love that name, and leading manufacturer of gun safes, beer, and patriotic apparel. And I love it. He's not apologetic, nor should we be. His show, Maximum Archery, ran for 10 years on the Outdoor Channel, the Sportsman Channel, and Pursuit Network. Hi, Andy. Good to have you along on the Ellen Nathan All-Stars.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Well, we are doing this show the day after the Super Bowl, the highly controversial halftime show, and the all-American alternative to the halftime show. I have all kinds of opinions. I can't wait to hear about yours, Andy Ross.
Well, I did. I definitely did watch the Super Bowl. I did take in both of the events, and it did take a few Rebel lights in my hand to get me through the Super Bowl one, but I got through it. And I think the NFL really wore out their rabbit's foot on this one. No pun intended there, but
that's a good pun.
I think they really doubled or tripled down on it as well, because the amount of money they spent on that production to make sure, do their best to make sure that it was an event was unbelievable. The amount of production they put on that thing.
Which one are you talking? The Super Bowl one or the All American?
I'm talking about the Super Bowl. The NFL really came out of pocket to try to convince us that was a good time. And, pun intended again, hopped right on over to see Kid Rock and my buddy Lee Bryce sing The Paint Off the Wall. And, I thought the thing that was really cool, the one thing that sticks with me more than anything, on the alternative, halftime show, was Kid Rock came out and played one of his just banger hits and just, rocking, but then got reintroduced is Robert Ritchie, and came out as his own. Like I'm gonna come out as Bob Ritchie. I'm gonna come out and I'm gonna put some new lyrics on this song, and I'm gonna talk about God, and I'm gonna talk. And it was so believable. And I don't know that he's ever done that. I don't know that he's ever came on stage under his real name. If you know him in person and you meet him, I mean, he will introduce himself to people. Hey, I'm Bob Ritchie. How you doing? He doesn't introduce himself as Kid Rock, but I don't know that he's ever came out on stage that humbled and that like, this is important. This ain't coming from just Kid Rock. This is coming from Bob Ritchie and coming from my heart. And I thought it was really cool.
Yeah. And lest the left scream about the evangelism on that show, which I expected there to be more. And as a person of a minority religion that doesn't like to get proselytized to, actually, we're the basis for the other two. I'm Jewish. I loved supporting this show. I'm proud to support the All-American halftime show. And lest Democrats, be they Christian or otherwise, I don't think it would be complain about the religiosity of that show, which wasn't the whole show by any means, I would point out that the agenda of the left for years now on halftime shows has been extremely religious. It has been a worship of wokeism, of devil worship, of pornography, and of all things that are the antithesis of God. And I think that needs to be said.
That message has been loud and clear coming from them, not only on halftime show, but go to not just the Grammys that just happened, but the Oscars. They just some of the stuff that they put out there. You wonder how their conscience even allows them to come out and do that. It's demonic. It's just
evangelizing a religion.
They are.
They're evangelizing communism, nihilism, and hatred for this country. Did you happen to hear or read in any of the post commentary on the Super Bowl show that if you translate those lyrics, which nobody did because they couldn't understand it, and I didn't watch an ounce of it. I didn't want to see it, didn't want to watch it. But apparently it was a good thing that they did it in Spanish, because even in English and even NBC, it wouldn't have got past the censors. It was disgraceful, pornographic, ugly, something that, and to try and put that, slip that by people while they're saying they're being inclusive, well, that's just disgraceful. What do you think?
You know, I saw some of it last night directly after, I was over watching the Kid Rock show and Lee. But, you know, about an hour after the halftime shows, I saw some of it coming in, and it just, it didn't surprise me. I mean, it didn't surprise me at all. And I've seen other artists on the halftime show lately that have just, you know, put a lot of stuff out there in English that you could understand in here and didn't understand how, you know, that could be coming across the airways. I think something that's going to be real interesting on the Super Bowl that I want to see. I live in Nashville, and we're getting the Super Bowl here in, I think, 2 years. It's 2 or 3 years. The Super Bowl's coming to Nashville. They're building a new stadium, and it's already been slotted to them. Are they going to allow Nashville to show off the best of what Nashville is? If I watch the Super Bowl in New Orleans, I want to see brass instruments. I want to see what they do. If they broadcast out of Nashville, you know, are they going to do a George Strait or a Tim McGraw or a Garth Brooks, or are they going to do some of the newer artists or a collection of these artists and let Nashville and actually Nashville and the CMA people actually be proud of what they've produced here in Music City? Or are they going to go completely off script with that? I can't wait to see who they book, because to me it's obvious who they should be putting
I can't
there.
Wait for it either, Andy. And the left has telegraphed again and again and again that you can be proud of who you are, your culture, your ethnicity, your anything, unless you're white, American, male. If we don't approve of you, you're not allowed to be proud of your country. You're not allowed to care about preserving your culture. I mean, it's just twisted. Because cultural appropriation, which they accused everyone of doing, is exactly what they do. They're trying to misappropriate our culture, which is much more identifiable than people think. Andy, before we continue, could you stay one more segment with us?
I'd be happy to.
Oh, that'd be great. Because I want to... The fact that you're a country patriotic rock artist and former TV
host. Emphasis on rock.
I love that. Okay. Well, I love it because it looks like with this American, all-American halftime show, which I cannot tell you how much I love it, because it is a positive protest. And look at the difference between the way the Democrats protest and the way conservatives protest. Yeah, it's a little bit radically different. And it seems like there's going to be a greater and greater and greater opening for faith, family, freedom, programming on TV, music on the radio. And it looks like a golden age, to coin a Trump phrase, for people like you to get heard, to get seen, and to get celebrated.
Well, every day I get to wake up and put a guitar in my hand and sing a song is a blessed day. So I definitely look forward to continuing to get out there. We got a great tour set up this summer, and it's just a blessing.
Wow. It's too bad we didn't have any sound that we could play your music. We have only a couple of minutes before our break, and I wanted to talk to you about the Grammys and so forth. Tell us a little bit about your music before we have to end in this segment. How'd you do a blend of country and rock?
Well, I'll try to give you the short version here, but, you know, as you mentioned earlier, I had the TV show Maximum Archery World Tour, and I wanted my TV show, even though it was about bow hunting and I was bow hunting 7 months out of the year filming the show, I wanted it to have kind of an edge and a rock edge and some grit to it, because you got to entertain the kids. It's hard to entertain. You know, they had cool things like skateboards and motorcycles and BMX bikes, and the video games were getting cool. So
yeah,
we wanted to, and I could ride and I could play, and I wrote "Got to Go Hunting Blues," "Hunt Me Down," "Buck of a Lifetime," "Blood Trail on a Whitetail," "Support Your Local Wildlife," all these hunting songs for the show.
I love it.
Really, was just doing it for the show. Go ahead.
Let's hold it there. I misappropriated, and we have only 10 seconds. So glad you're going to stay with us. We'll pick it up there after this break. You're listening to the Alan Nathan All-Stars. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Steve Radke, president of the Northwestern Mutual Foundation. Every day around the world, over 1,000 children are diagnosed with cancer. At Northwestern Mutual, we've been trying to find better treatments and cures for those cancers, but we also know that a diagnosis can have an incredible emotional and financial impact on an entire family. In fact, studies show that 60% of families lose household income as a result of a cancer diagnosis. So when you couple that with the rising cost of education, this prompted us to create our Childhood Cancer Scholarship Program. Our Childhood Cancer Scholarship Program, now in its 8th year, works by providing college scholarships to those who are affected by childhood cancer, either survivors themselves or of siblings of survivors. To date, we provide over 370 scholarships, totaling more than $3 million to help alleviate some of that financial strain. For more, visit the Northwestern Mutual Foundation website, nmfoundation.com, and we're accepting applications until February 2nd.
The 2026 Milano Cortina Winter Olympics are just around the corner. For Team USA luge athlete Ashley Farquharson, reaching the pinnacle of her sport is only the beginning. Ashley explains.
I'm thrilled to be able to represent Team USA at the Winter Olympics this year. As Olympians, we dedicate our lives to something that's often a very short-term thing, and retirement comes at a young age. Despite all of the excitement surrounding the games and the hard work and dedication that go into my training, I still have to think about and prepare for life after sport. Thanks to Guild and the Team USA Learning Network, I'm able to take classes at Purdue Global. The partnership allows me to get my education on a schedule that's flexible for me. So no matter where I am in the world competing, I'm also able to earn my business degree and prepare for my future. It's great to have this platform with Purdue Global that's flexible and inexpensive. They've already shown us that they're helping Team USA athletes achieve our goals.
Join Ashley in the pursuit of your education goals at Purdue Global, the preferred online university and degree provider of the Guild and Team USA Learning Network. Get started at purdueglobal.edu.
Welcome, everyone, back to the Alan Nathan All-Stars. I'm Karen Cataline, and we are having a wonderful conversation with country and patriotic rock artist, former TV host, founder of CEO of American Rebel, and just an all-around well-known great guy, Andy Ross. Thank you, Andy, for staying with us for another segment. We appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Great. You were in the middle of telling us just a little more about American Rebel and what you do in your music, and then you kind of got cut off. Tell us about Maximum Archery. A show you did run, yeah.
Yeah, Maximum Archery World Tour. We did it for 10 years, and I wanted to enhance the show with a little bit of a rock and roll edge. I could play music, so I could play and record and write, and I wrote, "Got to Go Hunting Blues," "Hunt Me Down," "Buck of a Lifetime," "Blood Trail on a Whitetail," "Support Your Local Wildlife," and I put these hunting songs on the show for the sole purpose of enhancing the show and making the show kind of rock and roll. What I didn't know was here came file sharing, the internet exploded, here came iTunes, and the next thing I knew, I had music going everywhere. Other people were using it on their shows. And then I was getting calls out of Nashville from major touring artists that were hunters and said, "Man, we'd love to be a guest on your show. But, and also we've heard your music and, you know, it's all right. But if you're ever in Nashville, it's right." And so 17 years ago, I came to Nashville. I got to write. I ended up with producer Doug Grau, who had handled a lot of the top artists in Nashville. And he gave me the opportunity to make a record. Made the second record called Time to Fight. On that track in 2014 on that CD was a song called American Rebel that I wrote. It went viral as a patriotic anthem, landed me on Counting Cars. And then we decided to turn the, in 2015, turn the popularity of the song into a brand. And we, that's when we started the company, and the song became the mission statement. And we've just been, you know, kicking it ever since.
Well, it you definitely hit a nerve, as I think the alternative halftime show did last night. Maybe you'll be on next year's halftime show. Wouldn't that be wonderful?
You know, I want to share this with you, if I may.
Please.
Because this just happened to me the other day, and it happens about every week or every other week, and it blows my mind. On our can, we have American Rebel Light Beer, Rebel Light. On the can, it says America's patriotic, God-fearing, Constitution-loving, national anthem-singing, stand-your-ground beer. And I will have media, because I get interviewed from left-wing media as well before shows and stuff, and they will say to me, you know, that's a Trump beer, that's a MAGA beer, that's a right-wing-only beer, you're messaging. And I just look at them and I said, are you telling me that no one on the left is patriotic, God-fearing, Constitution-loving, national anthem-singing? How does that offend anyone on the left? If they're claiming to be patriots, what's wrong with God-fearing, Constitution-loving, national anthem-singing? Where was the offense?
Well, they don't claim to be patriots, and that's the first honest thing that they say, which is they don't love our country. And they find it offensive for someone to be unapologetic about loving our country. Now, I'm not saying every single Democrat, but the leftists who took over the party have tried to vilify love of country. They most certainly, I don't see how anybody could make an argument against the fact that they have tried to vilify the whole notion of God and accountability to God, or why would they elevating satanic things on one of the biggest watched programs, Super Bowl halftime shows? I mean, they have shown us, and that's not everybody, but there's an awful lot of hangers-on and people on the bandwagon who just follow along because they're told if they don't, they're racist, they're bigots, they're whatever they are. This fighting back isn't just admirable, it's absolutely necessary, I think.
Well, I don't understand why my product offends them, but on the other hand, sometimes I'm glad it does. It's a lot of fun.
Well, they do say that if you're really aggravating them, you're over the target. I mean, and we are finding that the chess game of politics, now they are actually cheering for anti-God, cheering for criminals, cheering for bad behavior, and cheering against law enforcement that protects law-abiding citizens. So I don't know. I think that they've come out of the closet agenda-wise, and I think that's why it's so valuable and important to have people who are, as we've said, unapologetic. Yes. Go ahead. Were you going to say something?
You're absolutely right about them coming out of the closet. I mean, that door flew wide open. But I just to get amazed at people I just don't understand why they would have that opinion about something that seems so clear to me, you know, patriotic, God-fearing, Constitution-loving, national anthem singing. You know, we're not going to change our messaging. I wrote the song, you know, 2012, I think, put it out in 2014, and that's been our mission statement since been in business 11 years, and we're not stopping.
Yeah. And you know, the war on rural people, people with a Western sensibility, has been going on for a long time. It's not as if there aren't conservative thinking people in cities too. They're just getting stomped on, you know? I think that's part of what's going on. I mean, we were just talking about the fact that arresting criminal illegal aliens is like an 80-20 issue. people, 80% of everyday people approve of that because they know that they'd be the victim of crime. And yeah, did you happen to see this Billie Eilish? I've never heard her music, but apparently a British journalist went out and visited her home and wanted to see if she practiced what she preached. Did you hear about that?
I sure did. And I, one of the things I thought was really interesting was when she made that comment, no one is illegal on stolen ground.
Yes.
She got more praise and applause and standing ovation from the crowd than she did for winning Song of the Year.
Wow. Did she win Song of the Year? But oddly enough, there are walls and security fences and cameras and a massive gate at her place. She wasn't inviting the journalist in. She was keeping him out. I wonder how that works. It's called hypocrisy signaling. Andy Ross, love talking to you. Hope to talk to you again soon. Best of luck, and I want to see you on next year's halftime show.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-978-0600 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.